Beware, spoilerphobes. You've stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones in conjunction with George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. Now that we're in the final season and well beyond the books, the podcast will include a spoiler section later in the episode that can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, production spoilers, guesses, theories, and crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. And if that isn't for you, feel free to jump off after the first section. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder.
One of two things will happen. Either the dead will defeat the living, in which case all our troubles come to an end, or life will win out.
And what then? Don't fight in the north or the south. Fight every battle, everywhere, always. Your mind, everyone is your enemy, everyone is your friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once. Live that way, nothing will surprise you. Everything that happens will be something that you've seen before.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have not read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, and I am happy to report that I have now also caught up with Game of Thrones, including the latest episode.
We're here for Storm of Spoilers. If you, caught the disclaimer at the beginning, this is going to involve discussions of things like outside of show things, interviews, pictures and things that we have access to, maybe some things that we know, but lucky for you people who
whatever
don't
brand
love spoilers.
Has
exactly, we're going to try to use all of our brand vision to wait for all the key players and key facts, but like Bran, we will be waiting for you at the end of this podcast in a special The Storm section. Most of this podcast is going to be dedicated to our analysis of season 8, episode 1 of Game of Thrones, titled Winterfell, the first step into the final season, and a surprisingly funny entry into Game of Thrones. But before all that, welcome to Storm of Spoilers if this is your first time. If this is not your first time, or even if you grow to love us over this season, I feel like I should tell you that we will be attending Con of Thrones. It's a Game of Thrones convention, July 12th through 14th. If you use promo code STORM when you buy your tickets, you will get a discount. And then you'll also
like $5, right?
Yeah. And then you'll also get to come see us debate this final season even more than what you're getting right now. Joanna, we've been around for a while. We've been around for years. do we have any reviews from our dedicated listeners?
We do. I should like go back and find our first review. I'll try to remember to do that. Probably won't do it. Okay. This one comes from LP Campbell, 5 stars. This podcast is pretty great. I look forward to this podcast every week during Game of Thrones. I don't always listen on the off-season tour because I'm subscribed to 47,390,285 other podcasts, so I just have to pick and choose. But for Game of Thrones content, you couldn't find a better podcast. The hosts are fun and insightful, and even when I disagree with something they say, I'm fully into it. I look forward to another Game of Thrones season and all the random off-season tour episodes that I listen to. And the spin-off Game of Thrones shows don't go away. Stay here and discuss those too. P.S. Joanna, your voice is just fine. Thanks. And then one more from Nick from WCN. Inspirationally great show, 5 stars. As an avid Game of Thrones fan, listening to the show each week to hear the host's take on the episode has become a staple in my weekly watching routine. They each bring a distinct perspective to their analysis and speculation, and their differing but cohesive personalities provide a welcoming and fun atmosphere that warms my otherwise drearily morning commute. Dreary morning commute. As one of my favorite podcasts, Storm of Spoilers has been largely inspirational in the decision to create my own podcast.
Woo! We had a baby!
Twist.
Plug encouraged but not expected. It's called Working Class Nerds. Nick from WCN. Got it. Thank you for all that you do. I cannot recommend the show highly enough. Sincerely, a new small council member. Thank you, Nick, for joining the small council of our Patreon and for creating your own podcast. Mazel.
Nice. Excellent.
That Patreon shout out is kind of important. If you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers, not only do you get the episode that you're hearing now for free because you don't have to subscribe for any Storm of Spoilers content, but you do get bonus content levels, all as an option for you. At our $1 level, you'll get access to our Slack community where they are all together live watching the episodes and asking each other questions, both spoiler filled and not. At the Maester level, you'll get access to our Maester Monday bonus episodes, which actually come out before this, our weekly episodes, as well as some other bonus. And then at our small council level, you'll get the Maester bonus podcast and then a Small Sounds Thursday bonus podcast, which is sort of a question and answer format for our highest tier members. So make sure to go check that out. Well, one of the other benefits of being a small council member is you get to watch a movie with us. Neil, what are we doing this month?
Oh, Dave, I'm very excited to be able to say this sentence. On Saturday, 4:20, we will be watching Reign of Fire.
Love, it's a burning thing.
So it's going to be, I believe, firing. The youths call it lit. It's the most lit movie club we've ever had. It'll be Reign of Fire on 4:20. So you have, by the time you hear this episode, you'll have a couple of days. You can sign up, be part of the small council, get in on this Saturday afternoon watch of the Christian Bale, Matthew McConaughey, Gerard Butler, Uber Dragon classic.
I was so worried that you were going to leave Gerard Butler off.
Would never. My mom listens to this. I would get a phone call immediately being like, you left Gerard Butler off the list.
Reign of Fire streams on HBO, so if you guys have HBO, you have access to Reign of Fire already, so that's great news.
It's an HBO-themed month here on Storm Spoilers. Yeah.
Not sponsored by HBO, we should be clear. And then also, little baby Joffrey Baratheon, Jack Gleason's in this movie.
Oh, that's right. I always forget about acting career pre-Game of Thrones.
I think he, peed himself on screen. This is, a story he told, that he had, an accident on screen, and you can... not see it necessarily, but we'll make sure if you watch along with us on 4:20, Reign of Fire, we will point out the moment when King Joffrey, pissed himself, while filming.
Because of some dragon shit. Probably.
If that isn't enough bonus content for you to go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers right now and check out our levels, I don't know what is.
Guys, I have a question about this week's episode of Game of Thrones.
You brought it to the right audience.
Okay, what do you think, when Bran was waiting in the courtyard all night and a good chunk of a day for Jaime Lannister to arrive, how do you think, did he eat anything? Was he just out there starving in the courtyard, just sitting there waiting for Jaime? What did he do, do you think?
Yeah, what's my man's routine out there?
I mean, maybe he can warg into some hunting crows. Is hunting crows a thing?
Why not?
Just warg into a lamb and have it come into the courtyard.
I'm just thinking, maybe he wants to send a raven to Postmates and get some food delivered to him.
That sounds way easier than our ideas.
Ye way old easier. Postmates, the most loyal of bannermen who never refuse the call, who are always handing over generous portions of grain. I know of this house.
Their sigil is a bicycle messenger with 3 stars on a white banner.
It could be worse. Could be a Floyd man, you know?
Exactly.
It is true. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever you could think of delivery service all year round in any courtyard in the north.
I know that Sansa would use this to order more grain for the giant dragons she has to feed now.
No more trips to the store. You don't even need to know where the store is. You could practically be Bran and just summon it with your brain. Postmates will deliver anything to you. If you don't have Bran level food summoning brain powers, you can download the Postmates app to your phone, your iOS or Android for free. You can browse local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery. And as Neil keeps pointing out, get some more effing grain.
Seriously, I feel like we're not paying attention to what's real here, which is we need more grain.
You could send the grain 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Postmates will bring you what you want within the hour. That's 24 hours of potential grain delivery, just nonstop. Anything you're craving, including grain, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the known universe with more than 25,000 partner merchants. You know what? We should just order more troops.
Yeah, I was about to say, do you think Bran actually had Poe's Mace deliver Jaime Lannister to him? Do you think that's what's happened?
That would be great. Just like time postmates.
Yeah.
Bran is like, it was a little light. Or it was a little later than I expected, so 4 stars.
Yeah, exactly. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Start your free deliveries, download the app right now, and use this book. Right now, and use the code SPOILERS.
That's code SPOILERS for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app.
Get anything you need, anytime you need it. Download Postmates and save with the code SPOILERS. Man, do you know how much grain you could get for $100 in 7 days?
Tons.
So
hourly.
So much grain.
24 hours.
Could fix this whole situation.
Postmates. Neil, we don't want to confuse people with an early storm, because the storm is what we call spoilers. So if you've been around for the off-season tour, we know this is where we usually talk about other things besides Game of Thrones. Who has time for that? It is Game of Thrones final season week. Neil, do we have any ravens here in our citadel of Crazy Town?
Well, yes, Dave, it is time to send a raven, receive a raven. We're going to do a bunch of raven stuff. The first thing I want to talk about this week is the poll that we do. This is a thing that I recently remembered that we did for previous seasons, so we're going to do it again. So this week's poll, and this will lead into our first question, is of these 4 reunions, which one did you find most memorable? Because as we know, this episode Winterfell very much about the reunions.
Where did we put this poll so people could?
This was on Twitter.
Polls at Storm of Spoilers. Maybe?
At Storm of Spoilers. Yep. So these are the 4 options that we gave our followers: John and Arya, John and Sam, Sam and Jorah, and Jaime and Bran. So what I want to do is first get our answers, and then we will talk about who won the poll. So I'll even start. I'll talk about my favorite reunion of the episode, which was Sam and Jorah, which got onto the poll because it's in some sort of sadistic way. I wanted to see if people would vote for it because it was sad. But also I just love the whole Jorah of it, where he's just like, I'm doing a nice thing and this is going terribly all of a sudden. so that one is, that one's my sort of offbeat, pick. Joanna, what was your favorite reunion of this episode?
I'm gonna pick this one because it's way too brief, and I'm worried.
Happens way too soon.
I'm worried it's the hello and goodbye, and the only time these two characters will be together, is my fear, which is Theon Greyjoy and Yara Greyjoy. You know, there's the headbutt, there's the hand reach, there's the, like, let's stand moodily on the prow of the ship wearing scarves and looking amazing, which they do. Theon got, like, such an upgrade this season in his costume. He's got some, like, good Greyjoy armor and, like, you know, fancy Ironborn scarf sort of situation, and his hair's grown out. So anyway, I'm here for Theon and Yara. It was super, super short, and her saying, what is dead may never die, but kill the bastards anyways, is actually a pretty good line. So that's my Greyjoys.
It's a good one. Love those Greyjoys nowadays. Dave, what do you got?
I feel like all these reunions are not only good answers, but things we're going to talk about later in the episode. So I'm going to pick Gendry and a good forge, because yeah, there's lots of versions of Gendry. And obviously my favorite is Dick Leech Gendry, but we're probably never going to get that again. And if we do, we don't have time for
there's the so many other people with King's Blood at this point.
It takes years. Yeah, exactly. more importantly, maybe Gendry would volunteer though, because, you know, if you do Dick Leeches once, he could survive Dick Leeches again. I definitely like
Dick Leech me once. Shame on you.
Dick Leech me twice. I will actually volunteer for that one.
Yeah, Dick Leech me twice. Are we dating now?
Yeah. Is this like Facebook official or what's happening?
Yeah, I think that's what it means for sure.
does High Valyrian for Prince and Prince Who Was Promised also apply to penis? Because maybe we've just been looking, maybe we've been generalizing and looking for something with too much of a
the prince anyway, or princesses or leeches who are promised.
I like Gendry and making weapons, you know, doing the thing that he was raised doing and actually enjoys doing and is said doing much better than rowing Gendry or running Gendry. So Gendry in one place, in one of the warmer spots in Winterfell, making some dragon glass weapons for his friends. Good job, Gendry.
He's gonna get real warm. He's gonna take that shirt off at some point. It's gonna be good.
Yes.
Yeah, great
bask
stuff
in the sun.
I really love that. When I talked to Joe Dempsey, I think it was at Con of Thrones, but it might have been on the Still Watching podcast. I can't remember which one. He's like, yeah, I worked out, but then also those kind makeup ladies just took some like soot and basically made me a six pack. And I was like, okay, well, you know,
those ladies know what's up.
It can get real sooty in the Winterfell smithy.
Anyway, so to finish up, here's what our followers on Twitter at Storm Spoilers said. They picked Jaime and Bran 42% over Jon and Arya 39%, and then those other two were not close. 2,200 people voted, so thank you all to everyone who voted. I think there's a little bit of recency there, obviously. Jaime and Bran feeling pretty good about them, you know, good and strong, and you'll get 3% more votes. That's the thing. Anyway, on to some questions. Got a couple of totally randomly selected questions, I assure you. First one from at Peggy Lame on Twitter. Great handle. What is Theon going to do? We just talked about Theon and Yara. If he fast travels to Winterfell by the end of the episode, that really wouldn't make sense to me. And this really, I picked this one out for Dave. Dave, is Theon the new fast traveling champion now that Littlefinger is gone?
Ooh, I mean, I do like my Theon Greyjoy ascendant. I like being back on his side, and I do think he's going to make it to Winterfell by the end of next episode. But that being said, I think the successor to Mockingbird Airlines might change per episode or like every other episode, because I have a feeling we're going to need to jump around the map a lot more before the season is over. But right now, let's give it to Theon.
Isn't Dragonair?
Well, I mean, Dragonair is sort of the ultimate, but like, is there going to be a Theon? Do we need to have a Theon rides a Kraken theory, I think is what at Peggy Lame is getting at.
Maybe, or have a Yara rides a Kraken theory, because I don't know about where all the docks and King's Landing are, but there's a possibility she has to go around the Horn and recapture.
Here's what's not going to be useful this season, and they told us this, you know, well before the season. It's not going to be useful for anyone to get the fucking map out and be like, oh, actually, and like plot a course, because like efficiency is not, it's not that efficiency is coming. Efficiency done arrived in like Game of Thrones, right? And so like wherever
efficiency
they,
been here this whole time,
like wherever they need those characters to be, they gonna be there. So you know, like you can get your maps out if you want. It's just not gonna like bring you. It's not gonna spark any joy in your life in order to do that.
Unless we want to come up with a Theon rides a Kraken theory, then that will bring some joy to everyone's life.
I don't hate it. I really don't hate it. Is it a land Kraken?
I mean, it's like a very large.
So, like, I don't know, when it's on, it's a normal Kraken when it's in the sea, and then when it gets up on the land, it gets up on all its tentacles like tippy toes.
Or it just takes him. It takes him from the sea, and with one of its tentacles, it just sort of throws him.
Yeah,
to Winterfell,
just catapults him.
Yeah, it like takes him to what like White Harbor, and then just sort of like flings him.
It's
from
like
there.
This is as far up as the river we go. I'm going to throw you from here.
Last stop.
Last stop on the Kraken Express. Okay, so, and then this question is more of a structural question that I thought would be good to answer, since this is our first Game of Thrones recap episode since 2017.
Wow.
Right? Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know. So this is from O. Ali Deer on Twitter, and asking, does the storm have spoilers for the next episode or the whole season? Is it safe to listen to last week's? I think this actually is a very good thing to qualify for people who are listening. The storm has all of the spoilers.
Yeah, you're not. If you are going to be one of the many people that actually did this with us last season and came out of it just fine and enjoyed the podcast, who just listened to the calm, press pause, and then don't come back until after the whole season is over. Then come back to listen to us be, you know, very wrong and very right about things. That's a perfectly valid way to listen to Storm of Spoilers, for sure. This podcast was founded when we were sort of retreading book territory, and has since been pushed beyond it. And so we know that even when we were in book territory, we might have not have been everybody's flavor, but we tried to delineate the speculation spoiler part of our podcast and the parts that, you know, have pulled in all the outside sources and put it back in the spoiler section. And then you'll hear Euron kill the former king of the Iron Islands in its entirety. And then if you're still listening after that, you are in the storm. Everything's open for speculation and theories and things we might possibly know about what's coming up. I don't mind so much talking about the next week on in the calm if it like links into something, but we're going to play that by ear as we go. We're definitely not going to spoil anything beyond what you saw air as part of your digital file or on television on HBO this Sunday on Game of Thrones.
Because, okay, wait. So Euron goes, I am the Storm Brother, the first and the last, and you're in my way, right?
And then you hear, poof, and then there's a long pause, it's just rain, and then you hear his body hit the ground.
So you have, like, all that time. You have, like, everything that Euron says, which is, like, hella dramatic and drama queeny, and then you've got Balon's whole fall down, like, his Wile E. Coyote fall down to the water to bail the fuck out of the podcast before we hit the storm. So
if you're looking down on your device right now, you will see a time code about when this happens, even. We're putting up as many walls as you can, but like the Night King with the frozen dragon, you could bust right through those walls whenever you want.
Boom.
That's how it's going to work. Storm of Spoilers, Season 8, kicking off with the bang right after this.
Guys, I have another really important question about this episode.
I love important questions.
Okay, so Daenerys is on her way to Winterfell, right?
Yes.
And she's got all her Unsullied and Dothraki with her. And then they roll up to Winterfell, and then all of a sudden they're, like, dressed for winter. Is there one seamstress on the boat who is, like, you know, furiously sewing new winter-friendly armor for the Unsullied and like, whipping furs together for the Dothraki? How did they get winter-ready by the time they got to Winterfell?
Oh, that's a really tough one. This might be one of the great questions.
I think I might know the answer as, you know, a former drinking buddy of an old maester at Winterfell, which is, you gotta do, if you're in the north, if you're anywhere within hearing the sound of my voice distance worldwide, then Bombfell is gonna be the way that your gentleman can get better clothes. For you, for the gentleman in your life, you're going to get better clothes by using the Bombfell service. Let me tell you how this works. There's a stylist that emails you or sends a raven with a scroll of all these fashion selections after getting your preferences. There are shirts, there are pants, there are socks. I know that's very important to some of our listeners. You get to say, hey, I want to try this on. I want to try this out. Send that back to your stylist. You will get a box with all those clothes you selected. You get to take them out. You get to try them on. If things look good on you, great. Keep them. They're yours. If things don't look good on you, throw them back in the box. It comes with a bag you can just ship them back into. You don't need to, like, fold your clothes back up to send them back to Bombfell. And toss the whole thing back to Bombfell. And then those items, you know, you're not charged for, and it happens again next month. You don't need to go shopping. You don't need to have some sort of magic walking kraken that is going to take you to wherever all the good seamstresses are. You just need Bombfell to give you a 7-day trial period every month with some of the most fashionable clothes for men.
All right, Dave, so I think if I hear you right, what you're saying is, if I'm a Dothraki warrior, I can sign up for Bombfell. I can get some clothes. I can keep more. And when I keep more, I get more money off, which I think is great. If you keep 4 or more items, you get 20% off. If you keep 3 or more items, you get 15% off. Keep 2 or more items, you get 10% off. It's very flexible. You can receive clothes when you want, and you can pause or cancel at any time. Like if I were to die in battle, someone could cancel on my behalf. I'd be very appreciative of that.
So let me tell you guys how I personally use Bombfell, thanks to the advice of my old maester friend, is pants. Because you know what sucks in Winterfell and life is trying on pants. in a public setting. I don't know about you guys. I got really hairy legs. I'd rather people not know. And every chance they're not covered with full pants is a chance that my secret could get out. Bombfell definitely helped me with two pair of pants this month. All I had to do was sign up. I said, hey, listen, dude, I need some pants. He sent me a preview email with some pants and also some nice shirts. And I said, you know what? Send me those shirts and pants. They did. I didn't keep the shirts, but boy, did I keep two pair of pants, which is, of course, the plural of pants.
All right, so since we want all of our hairy-legged listeners and or Dothraki or Unsullied to feel covered, properly panted, or winter wear ready for what's to come, we talked to Bombfell and we got a little promo code for you guys. $25 off your first purchase if you visit bombfell.com/storm. That's bombfell.com/storm. Bombfell, open and close.
And we're here for Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 1, Winterfell. We begin with the first of many I just assumed we were going to go through this scene by scene. Do you guys want to do this differently? Joanna, I know this is the third dragon head of her three dragon headed podcasts. So, and then I know there's different ways that you go through it. Do we want to do locations? Do we want to do chronologically? Do we just want to free form talk about it and assume that everybody has seen the episode at this point?
Are you asking me on air? I
want to do something that makes you comfortable.
Well, I think we should. How about you guys talk about the things that you're most burning to talk about, and then I will chime in on them. But I don't need to drive the conversation since, you know, people really want to hear what you guys think. They've probably already a little bit heard what I think. So, I want to hear what you guys think.
Okay. Excellent. So, Neil, we're going to start with our procession, which is, you know, call back to our S1, E1 echoing that we get in this episode. Except this time it is Arya watching a procession of Dany and Jon and the only two black people of note in the North, apparently. as Missandei and Grey Worm get an awkward moment. I like this. The entirety of this episode, I feel, is soft. The only episode that is like allowed to be this soft and sort of try to pull at the old wonder strings without pulling at the old awe strings. Whether or not that's successful, I'm not going to begrudge the final chapter of a very tragic story to not, you know, be. It doesn't have to be all grit and whatnot. That being said, I don't think I necessarily needed three Arya faces in a row to remind me how things were going with her. How did this play for you?
Well, I think it's interesting, especially because we're starting at the beginning, that they start with not just Arya, but, you know, on this random boy who sort of lives in, I guess, whatever town that is right outside of Winterfell. I think what's interesting about it, and we get this in the brand new opening credits with that, which I think we should definitely talk about because they rule, that there seems to be this very deliberate thing where this episode, even though it is very warm blankety, like it's like, oh, look at all these reunions and all these happy things. It's also an episode that is starting to close the walls on everybody. So everything we're seeing is from a very, is from a lower perspective, physically lower perspective. There's a lot more intimate shots that I noticed sort of in these first couple of sequences. So it accomplishes two things. One, from the beginning, this episode is all about the world is smaller now. That's why they ditched all that stuff, all the other castles in the opening credits, because we're never going to go back to those other places. So they don't need to show them. It's just King's Landing, Winterfell, ice zombies. That's it. So I have a feeling the opening credits will evolve and whatever town is about to get killed by the Night King is going to be on there. And then it'll just be Winterfell and King's Landing, but it's all to
the Trident, right, Neil?
Yeah. But I think what I
episode
found,
four, Trident and the opening credits episode. Come on, guys.
Hell yeah. What I found most interesting is that, especially in the marketing, Game of Thrones is very focused on the big battle, that the first big battle that's coming, which is great because it confuses everybody and it stops us from thinking about anything that happens after that, which is like half the season. But it also will, in my mind, at least what I can see from the trailers, it's also going to be about intimacy. It's going to be about claustrophobia. It's going to be about space and like intimate moments inside of very large scenarios, basically. And I think that's a theme that they're building for at least the first half of the season. And that really stuck out for me out of this first episode, which is like, they want us to feel closer to everyone and they want us to feel like everyone else is closer to each other. So there's a lot of like moments where, especially in these first couple scenes, where it's like, I can tell why everyone's very uncomfortable right now, because it feels like everyone's about to get smashed into a can and then killed. So that's what stuck out to me in that first sequence.
No, and I think you brought up something off this podcast earlier in the week, but maybe on one of our bonus podcasts, about just like establishing the size of Winterfell against the dragons, which I also think there's a lot of visual story work being done in this first episode that is just now occurring to me that you're bringing it up.
Yeah. Well, and you think about, especially in the north, like the opening credits, the thing that stuck out to me in the opening credits was how many gates we went through. So how many Winterfell gates we see sort of being built as this very cool puzzle is being built in front of us. So it's all about the gates and the walls and the depth of King's Landing and the depth of Winterfell and the width of Winterfell, which I think it feels, I read an interview with people that did the credits. They didn't admit this, because I don't think that this is something you would admit, but it feels very on purpose. Like the whole show is just trying to make us feel like everything's coming down on us at all times, even in like normal moments.
Sorry. I also have, I have a storm theory about the opening credits. We'll revisit when we get to the storm.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Ooh, that's how throws work on this show, you know, for when we got to remember things. All right, so then everybody shows up. We get the first showdown of, I think, this week's hottest fandom debate, where Daenerys finally comes face-to-face with Sansa. And
have you been listening to the Rethrones, Dave?
Rethrones stuck with me. I think I've been pretty consistent, even in the off season, of Sansa-ing as much as possible.
Sansa. All right, go ahead.
Sansa.
You mean Sansa Stark?
Sansa Stark.
Oh,
yeah, Queen of the North. I guess Lady and the Lady of Winterfell is the proper title, because Jon's bent the knee and she,
You mean that, that little Lady of Winterfell.
Lady of Winterfell.
We are just as invested as the characters are in the real, you know, electricity on screen, but then Bran comes along and is like, we don't have time for any of this. And we are introduced to Bran Stark, positive plot device.
Absolutely.
Which, welcome. Welcome after, you know, being in a tree for a year that we didn't see you, to being uber useful. And yeah, another thing that these two are the first appearances of the internet's favorites of the episode. The Dany versus Sansa, and then Bran pushing people in the proper direction. Which one of those do you think is going to be more important in the immediate future, given that, you know, the episode ends with Bran basically forcing a confrontation with Jaime, in which he doesn't say anything. And then we have Dany and Sansa, who are going to maybe throw down definitely over Jaime, but are they going to come together in time for the Great War? Or is this another one of those Sansa conflicts that's going to be artificially drawn out? Neil,
yeah.
Your thoughts first.
Well, the whole Sansa Dany thing just reeks of fake out, and it reeks of like, oh man, are we doing this again? Like, seriously? What I love though is that there is enough self-awareness that they're like, all right, well, every time we do something like this, Bran's going to show up and make it super weird, because that's what the show is now. And I like that as a strategy. I don't like pitting Sansa and Dany together if they keep it going for more than, let's say, the next episode, that's going to be a problem for me. But, you know, because this is like bigger problems going on. But I do think I want to stop for a moment and appreciate the fact that they finally made Bran an interesting piece of the show. Like, the Bran has been boring for so long, and all he's done is just gotten weirder and weirder and weirder, and it finally works to cut the tension through these final like six episodes where we're assuming every terrible thing possible is going to happen. Okay. So I love that they just come swinging.
68 episodes.
Yeah, they just
and literally on the back of Hodor and OSHA and poor Jojen Warmhands Reed. And but now he's finally, oh, and the Three-Eyed Raven. And but here he is.
I can't believe it was all worth it.
I basically asked, when I interviewed Isaac Hempstead Wright for the Still Watching podcast, I basically asked him in the nicest way possible, how are you guys not going to make Bran boring this season? And he had an answer. He's like, we had a discussion about it. And I was deeply skeptical. This is before the premiere, so I was deeply skeptical that their play was going to work. And then I was like, oh, hey, what do you know? It worked. The internet fucking loves Bran. And I'm so happy for Isaac Hempstead Wright, because that poor kid, who's been doing a good job, I think, has been like the wet blanket, lame ass part of the series for a really long time. And he's finally a fan favorite. Isaac Hempstead Wright was on Twitter today being like, love all your memes, keep them coming. And I was like, oh, buddy, you deserve it. So.
Yeah. And I think that it illustrates to me as a book reader, why George wanted to skip over a bunch of stuff. Like, and we're now seeing what he wanted to skip to, sort of, just at least in like a tone thing, because you can see how Bran is now useful. Like, now that he's safe and within he's part of the team and everybody's on the same page and people believe him, he's going to be extremely potentially useful, as they are going to be, attacked by death, literal death. So, yeah, so I like it. They established Bran very quickly as like, oh, right, okay, maybe some of this was worth it.
As someone who hasn't read the books, Joanna, are we seeing a more activated Bran than it? Because it strikes me like in literary terms, you could have him literally become a tree person somewhere in Winterfell at this point if he actually survives to this point in the books. Does this seem like a show-only Bran?
I've never really loved Bran even in the books, but his book chapters are much more dynamic because they're these like cool wolf dreams. You know what I mean? And they're full of like that fun, cool, weird George R. R. Martin symbolism, you know, like when you get like the Dany visions and stuff like that. And so like there is stuff in Bran's chapters that are interesting and that the show just like could never do because they like weren't doing flashbacks, and they tried, like, you know, if you rewatch the show recently and like remember that in the early seasons they kind of tried doing Bran visions and would like quick cut. No, I'm not even talking about that like burn them all download that he did in season six, but I'm talking about like early Bran dreams,
like the wolf, like, literal wolf dreams that he has.
The wolf dreams, but also like there was the crow and like his brothers were in the forest with him and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like they were trying and they just could never get it because it's an interior character. And that's what I asked Isaac Hempstead to write. I was like, Bran is such an interior character with his visions, with his dreams, with all that sort of stuff. How do you make that dynamic on screen? And like what they've done, I think, is just lean into the inertness. So he's just so still. And when I was talking to John Bradley on the podcast, he was like, he's so still. And he's like, and that PS is what Isaac is like on set. It's a little creepy. He was like, he's like a ghost at the table. He's just like super still and like barely there all the time. And I think that Sophie Turner and Maisie Williams have said similar things about him, that he's just sort of creeps them out on set, with love. So
he's just very calm.
Yeah, he's just completely still. And like what John Bradley's point was, like, cause I was asking him like what it was like to be a scene partner, with someone like Bran. And he's like, Sam is a very like sort of active person. Like, you know, for all the fact that he's like scholarly and an indoor kid, he's like very like, you know, fidgety and nervous and alert and like all this sort of stuff. And so like to pair him, you know, he's like bumbling and stuttering and like whatever it is he's doing, he's sort of like moving. And to pair him with Bran, who's just like stock still, is actually kind of incredible to watch. So yeah, so I don't think we're going to get this Bran in the books, Dave, if indeed we ever get more Bran in the books.
Yeah, it seems like this was it's a good way to fix Bran on TV, but once you ring the omnipresent bell, it puts such an importance on Bran now. Like, everything he says to everybody, every look he gives to somebody, it's important now because the story signaled that he knows everything. He knows all your darknet surfing. So it's an interesting thing to like instant. It's a king-making power to see everything when the plot needs you to. And congratulations, Bran.
Congratulations maybe, for also being entertaining now.
Yeah.
And it's hard because like this is, we've talked about this, I think last season, when it's like when someone knows everything, as basically Bran knows everything. And the way they don't make that a complete premise breaking superpower, and Dave, we've all three of us, I guess, but Dave is specifically the one I remember bringing this up to me when we were talking about like the Marvel Avengers superheroes, is like there are premise breaking superhero powers. Like maybe Captain Marvel is too powerful. Maybe Scarlet Witch is too powerful. It's just like game over. Why even bother fighting when you've got someone who can do the things that this person can do? And so Bran's power is sort of premise breaking in its nature. So you have to like, you know, put it like a Fahrenheit 451, like shackle on him, right? And that shackle being, he doesn't understand what he sees. So he sees everything, he just doesn't understand what it means. So he knows Jaime is coming, he just doesn't know when, necessarily. And that he's getting better with his powers, but he hasn't mastered them. And so, like, the Three-Eyed Raven, like, Max von Sydow knew everything and understood everything. Bran just knows everything and he doesn't get most of it. It seems to be what's going on there.
Certainly doesn't get basic human interaction anymore, which is fantastic.
Yeah, there's some things you can just let go, and it's fine.
Yeah, common niceties. Letting people finish conversations. Reading the room before you say something. All those things go away when you're omniscient. All right, let's stay in Winterfell, because I think Winterfell is interesting. You are collecting all these people to fight the Night King, and they're all worried about your new girlfriend, Neil. It seems like if I were to say, Neil Miller, you are my king, and then you were to go south and you were to come back with a new girlfriend who had dragons, and I was like, I'm not sure I like your new girlfriend, that would seem like a friend opinion, not a is my king opinion. Am I mistaking loyalty for feudalism?
Well, Dave, I would probably say, if I were the king, former king in the North here, that you're rushing to judgment, which I think is a theme, sort of emotional theme that I picked up from this episode. Maybe I can't decide if it's something I don't like about the episode, but a lot of this, it feels like a lot of things are happening, obviously, but there's not a lot of time for the characters in the world to like let the moment like wash over them for a minute, or like think about what just happened. So I think the whole Jon Snow, his relationship with Daenerys in the North thing is really interesting, because it's all escalated so quickly. Like, it really gets out of hand, like a lot faster than I thought it would. Like, Lyanna Mormont stands up and she's like, hey, guess what? I'm in charge of putting people on blast around here, and you're next.
Attention.
Excuse me. We have business.
Lyanna Mormont's tea hour is in session.
Exactly. So she's like, I've been nominated to tell you that you're being a piece of shit right now. And Jon Snow is like, he's right. I think we know that he's right, right? Like, it's not about the kingdoms. It's about the Night King. It's about the threat that's coming. So it's interesting watching the show deal with the fact that Jon Snow's totally right. He's probably going to lose the argument in some way, but I don't know. It all depends on how people react to Jon's big news at the end of this episode. But I think the way they've set it up is it's like everything feels like it's happening so fast and no one's thinking about anything. So who knows?
He's right and he's not right. Like, I think he's right that they need to focus on fighting the Night King. But like, if Dany were a little cooler, she'd be like, I'll help you. Don't even fucking worry about bending the knee. We'll sort that out later.
Right. But it's Dany that people like, are still playing the game that is the problem.
Yeah. And Sansa, do that little finger quote again about like fighting all battles blah, blah, blah. How's it going?
All the time in your mind.
Yeah. So Sansa is not just concerned with fighting this battle, and she is. She's collecting her bannermen. She's concerned about that. She's like, okay, and then what? You know what I mean? And that's something that George R. R. Martin has always talked about. You know, like, he's got my favorite quote. We've talked about this on the podcast. I dropped this in the, like, Patreon Slack earlier today. I'm obsessed with the fact that George R. R. Martin's like, cool, Aragorn wins the war. Then what? You know? So they defeat the Night King. Then what? And I suspect this, both the show and the book will give us that, like, A Dream of Spring is very evocative of, like, what comes after the war. But, like, that's what Sansa's thinking about. She's like, cool, okay, we fight this battle, and then we've fucking bent the knee when I worked so hard to get my family home back. Like, you mentioned the Sansa-Daenerys conflict earlier. I'm actually, like, I don't put this in the same category as the Arya-Sansa conflict, which I found very manufactured. This feels very righteous to me. Sansa's feelings feel very righteous to me in this episode. And, like, it would be nice if she showed, like, a bit more measure of gratitude for the fighting forces that, you know, Jon and Daenerys have rounded up here. But at the same time, like, her not trusting anyone feels completely on brand. The fact that she hasn't been watching this TV show, so she doesn't know what Daenerys has been up to, and all she's heard about her is that she's, like, a really scary lady who likes to roast people with her dragons. So, like, and she's, like, bigoted towards Targaryens. Both of those things are true. And then also fucking Tyrion's like, oh, P.S. Cersei, who tormented you for years of your life, is coming too. You know what I mean? Like, I get Sansa in this episode. I do. I don't think it'll last. I think, you know, they'll come to terms, but, like, the fact that she's initially frosty, I think, is very reasonable in given her situation.
Well, yeah, and I think the show wants us to know that as well. Like, the way I interpret Arya sticking up for Sansa is both a result of what happened last season, but also the show kind of saying, like, yeah, like, don't just discount Sansa. You know,
I don't agree. I think we talked about this. I don't agree that she's, like, the smartest person in the whole world, which is, like, what Arya said. But I agree that she's not completely wrong here. And similarly, like, they spread the wealth, right? Like, Arya sticks up for Sansa. Lyanna Mormont, who's a fan favorite, like, brings the hammer down on Jon. You know what I mean? So it's not just, like, Sansa alone being, like, an irksome brawling scold or whatever. You know what I mean? She's got, like, other people on her team, brands on her team. You can tell just by the way she's glaring at Daenerys. You know what I mean? Like, she's got fan favorites on her side. And so that, like, helps us, be on her side. But she's also, like, she's also challenging. And that's okay.
Right. The North, the people of the North are tough. You know, it's going to take some convincing. Maybe.
I will say, on the Sansa front, I'm very into this being the beginning of the Sansa arc that then has two more parts to it. I would not like to be stuck here and then end up, this is the Sansa we get because the dead come and she doesn't make it out. That feels like a sort of waste to me. But I do like it as a beginning because for the first time, or not for the first time, but it's very rare that there's an argument that involves Sansa that I can see both sides of equally. And I think this time I do, obviously, because I've seen the Army of the Dead a ton more than everybody on this show, and they're terrifying. So that makes sense. But from someone who hasn't read the books, I want to ask, is there, like, a character assassination of the Houses of the North going on in this show? They've mostly been crappy, except for, like, Great John Umber. Little John? Great John Umber? Whichever one was good to Rob.
I think so, because, you know, I mean, the War of the Five Kings, you know, the whole process that really broke the North. And the North, you know, everything they say about them in this episode feels right. They're very loyal. They're very, like, sort of, you know, they protect their own. They're sort of isolationist, because it's also the biggest kingdom. So it feels emotionally right. And just, like, geographically, that's sort of who the North is. They're very wary of outsiders. And, I think that what we've seen of the North, which is a lot more than we get in the books, is how broken it becomes after the war. And it's feels like what George May, if he writes these books, spend a lot of time on is how the Stark children coming back helps reunite the North. And I still think that might be the story they're telling, but, yeah, it feels pretty true. They're probably a little racist.
All right. I just wanted to make sure. I got someone tweeting me being like, the Northern houses are getting a bad rap on this show. But apparently not. Apparently, you know,
I don't know that that's untrue, you know.
Well,
like, I think what they did...
the Northern houses have made some bad decisions.
I think what they did with, like, House Umber and House Karsark, like, with lying with Ramsay, that felt like a betrayal. What they're doing now, it's basically just House Glover that really, really sucks, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. What is it? Deepwood Mott? What's their castle? That one's in the credits next week.
Night King's a-coming.
Right. So, yeah, Lord Glover, he's getting his hour in the sun. He's going to be stamped to a wall of limbs. It'll be fun.
I hope, like, what pattern would you... If I were being whimsical, and I think the Night King is pretty whimsical, I might chop Lord Glover up into sort of like a hand pattern.
That's giving you the bird.
You know, like
a literal fuck you from the Night King.
Maybe. I don't know.
He's like, you guys obviously didn't get my last hint.
The Glover sigil? Yeah, it's a hand.
It's just a glove, so,
Yeah. So like a fist. I think that's what the Night King should do. He should go around murdering the heads of houses and then artistically arranging their limbs in the sigil of their house.
So you're like, remember that year the Academy Awards had all the human shadow sculptures? Is that sort of what we're talking about?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I want Edmure Tully chopped up and made into a fish. That's what I want. Give it to me.
Oh, poor Edmure. Did anybody even let him out of the... We never know if he ever got out of the prison.
It doesn't
I don't know. I'm
matter.
Kind of bummed because there was a rumor that he was in this episode, and he's definitely not. So that's a real bummer for me.
I don't think we even have time to talk about people we're sad weren't even in this episode. First of all, Robin Aaron wasn't in this episode. No. That's second at best. First of all, Robin Aaron wasn't in this episode, which is a
tragedy.
He's
taking his sweet time getting down from the Vale.
Robert,
you think he would have been there by now?
Robin Aaron,
army's there,
chopped up and made to look like a soaring bird. How beautiful!
He would really love. So that would actually be great for him.
Make the tiny boy fly.
Well, they rearrange him into a bird and then they just hang him from a rope out the moon door, so he's just constantly flying out the moon door.
It's like it's a body part mosaic, guys.
It's a real art instance. It's like, what's the White Walker version of MoMA?
Yeah.
We're fixing the White Walkers. Here we go.
They're just artists.
They're artists. Yeah. Come on.
You thought a zombie bear was cool, so you obviously can't be trusted. Here we go. He needs to use the bodies to make the sigils of the houses he's attacking. That's sort of what he's doing because he's leaving the thing.
The Bolton one would be easy. It's too bad Ramsay's already dead, but like Bolton one is that's like you just strip the skin, you're done. You know what I mean? So anyway.
Yeah, easy peasy. You're out of here.
I'm going to put this juju out in the world. I do not need Lyanna Mormont chopped up to look like a bear. I don't want it. No one ever said it. Let's just move on with our lives.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, she'd just be one of the skins in the thing. I don't think like one person per one bear skin. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah,
she would just be part of it. her brown little head would be the dot on the nose.
The Night King shows up. He's just wearing Lyanna Mormont as like a shawl.
My favorite nitpicky question about this episode, and is this what people tune into Storm of Spoilers for? I don't know.
I think so.
My favorite question that came out of this episode is, like, how did the White Walkers get all of Ned Umber and various other body parts up on the wall? Because it's very high, you know what I mean? So, like, was there a ladder-like situation?
Three they guys have like three coat? Giants. They have like three giants. The giants are definitely
doing
it.
Oh, the giants.
The
also, we already know that they have a hardware store.
Okay, so the giant went to Home Depot, got some like industrial grade staple is
the guy at the register is like, you know, giant chains are 2-for-1 this week, and he's like, no, we don't need any more of those. We already have that.
We need the giant staple gun, and he's stapling the House Umber men to the wall in a spiral, and the Night King is standing back and going, Loa, Loa.
Yeah. But it's like the ice screech language or whatever the heck it is. Scroft. Yes.
But what's like it's the just what's like everybody. The frustrated version when the White Walker turns back around and is like to the Night King, all his stupid criticisms.
Great, we solved it.
This is great. This totally makes it feel not terrifying like it was in the episode. Just everything's dumb when you unravel it. Let's stay in Winterfell and stick with something that's definitely dumb. Just riding a dragon involves just getting on its back.
It's no big deal, Dave. It's no big deal.
So basically, first of all, dumb. Second of all, dragon rodeos?
Dragon rodeos?
Yeah, why not? I bet I could stay on the back of a dragon longer than you could, Neil.
Well, that's for sure true.
We don't have to be a Targaryen. We just have to hold on to whatever you can, apparently, and try it.
Here's what's 100% true. You, Dave, would be the dragon rodeo champ out of the three of us.
Yeah.
Neil and I would be tossed so quickly.
Right.
I'd be tossed
because I've been doing the kegels.
Very obviously. Neil would outlast me.
I'm not getting on a dragon.
Bit.
I'm not even doing it. You're going to be like, let's do this dragon thing. And I'm like, nope.
Well, I guess the point being, it used to be something that
I'm
going to
sit over here with
Bran
and wait for my Postmates.
I used to think it was something that you had to be a Targaryen for, or at least do some sort of weird bonding experience. Or you just don't ride them at all because there's only one male and he eats ash, the Rain of Fire. But dragon rules are sort of amorphous depending on the fiction. This is a dumb show thing, right?
Sort of. Yeah, well, it's funny. I wrote in my notes that it's going to take George R. R. Martin 5,400 pages to work up to how John figures out how to ride a dragon. And the show is just like, no, it's fine. We don't need to explain this. I mean,
let's make it part of their flirting.
Yeah, I mean, in the books, there's a lot of, I don't want to call them rules, but just like, you know, the lore of what it takes to ride the dragon. It's like a lifetime bond. The dragons only respond to Targaryen blood. Like, all of this should have been obvious to Daenerys that, like, oh, if he can get up on the dragon, he's my somebody, you know, like so the show seems less interested in it just overall. And I think that's fine. It works for them because they don't have time, obviously, to stop and explain any of this shit. So, it's fine that Daenerys is like, well, nobody knows how it works. Just try it. And the rest of us are like, oh, it's because he's a Targaryen. And in the world of the show, I don't think they're going to care so much about the rules.
Let's go role play again. Neil, I sent you south as King of the North.
Uh-huh.
Except this time you come back with Joanna, who has two dragons.
Right.
Joanna, you and Neil are like having a thing.
Allegedly.
Do you offer up your new boyfriend to your kill puppies?
I was about to say, like, that's weird. That's like saying a brother and sister, but then like John and Daenerys
they are literally related.
I think it's equally as weird, but like, would you like, yeah, you have like these basically weapons of mass destruction. You're like, oh, let's use them as flirting devices.
Well, this
love Neil like a brother, that is not incestuous. And like, I would never make him ride my murder pet.
Well,
that's
here's the thing.
Awful.
This is probably my greatest criticism of this episode, which is it's not just that the show isn't taking time to like explain any of this. It's that none of the characters are stopping to ask any questions, which I think makes the show feel extremely rushed. So like this whole sequence plays out really wonderfully once they get on the dragons. Like it's sort of a fun little romantic thing. But like at no point does Jon Snow stop and be like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And I think the show is just like, all right, well, hopefully everybody keeps up because we're not going to stop and like have a scene where John tells Sam that he rode a dragon and then Sam explains what that means. So we're just probably not going to get that, and it's fine. I guess that's fine. But that is probably my criticism, is that there's a lot of stuff in this episode that feels like just sort of happens and they're like, we don't really need to explain it because this shit's going to be over in a couple weeks.
Here's what this foreshadows poorly to me is when Jon eventually has to say to everybody, I'm Aegon Targaryen. Wouldn't a great way to prove that be to walk up and ride a dragon? Now what are we going to do? You know, I feel like...
I mean, that's a better way for sure.
You have the words of Bran, who is not, you know, making himself the most liked character in Winterfell, and Sam, who is, but...
I'll tell you. You know how you do it, right? I know how to do it. You know how to do it, right? You get Howlin' fucking Reed to come riding in.
Oh my god, are we still on this Howlin' Reed thing?
Just saying.
I did appreciate the person on Twitter who responded to our call for questions and said, like, why didn't they just keep Mira around? She could have explained the whole Bran thing.
Well, no, exactly. And also, like, I got so mad because when I was talking to Isaac Hempster Wright, he was like, I was like, so Bran died in that cave, blah, blah. He's like, no, not really. Bran's not fully dead. There's still some Bran in there, and he's more Bran than ever when he's around his family. And I was like, cool. But when Mira left, he didn't have a fucking inch of Bran to spare for her. Like, are you kidding me? And so it feels like an off-season retcon to be like, Bran's not really dead. There's still some Bran in him. But I was like, that makes the Mira goodbye, like, extra shitty. I forever hate that scene. No justice for Mira Reed. Anyway,
no justice for Mira. I'm gonna have I have a storm idea on Jon's Targaryen reveal, so we're definitely gonna plant that coming up later. All right, let's see, anything else we need to talk about in Winterfell? Of course, Sam Tarly learns that, you know, his family was burnt, and it's very sad. He tells Jon his true identity. What else happens? Davos, Tyrion, and Varys all discuss maybe letting the two kids marry, which for some reason isn't an obvious choice to anybody else. I mean, maybe Daenerys doesn't want to, like, co-rule at this point in their relationship. But shouldn't that be something that more people would see as acceptable? If Jon and Daenerys get married, does that shore up the North the way they think it will? Joanna.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're doing the same thing that Sansa's doing, which is thinking about the war after the war. You know what I mean? And they're like, it would be a whole lot easier. Like, we could, like, chill out the Northerners also if, like, okay, maybe Jon isn't king of the North, but he's, like, king consort, and that's pretty good, you know, sort of thing. So, and I
agree. And then we have the end of the episode with somebody saying, well, Jon should just be king. So I think there's like it like escalate like the whole idea of what's going to happen as soon as Sam steps out in the middle of one of these great hall meetings and is like, hey, wait, I got something to tell you guys. It's going to escalate it very quickly. So I think they're just sort of, it feels like they're planting the seed for this to become a big solution. I don't know if it's the solution.
Right. One, both, or neither. Okay, cool. I'm okay with that. Jon gets told his true identity. Yeah, I like both those actors doing scenes together. The crypt is a fun place to see it. The weird thing
it's
about
better,
this episode,
I mean, like, it doesn't really make sense for Sam to do it, I think. Like, honestly, I mean, like, basically they had the whole Tarly reveal so Sam could have an emotional motivation to sort of, like, enliven this delivery of information that we, the audience, already have, right? You know, like,
right.
I talked about this on A Cast of Kings, so I don't mean to, like, repeat myself, but, like, you know, we, the audience, already know who Jon is. So for Sam to tell him, there has to be, like, some added stakes, and the added stakes are Sam's emotions around it. But what's, like, what really should be true is that, like, Bran tells it. But can you imagine Bran robotically, like, delivering, your name is fucking Aegon Targaryen, in, like, you know, his emotionless way, you know, that would be so lifeless. So to make it Sam and to make it emotional for Sam for a certain reason, I think is the smartest thing they could have done, to do this.
Yeah. Well, and two, Jon Bradley, the performance he gives, I mean, as I was watching it, I was like, this is probably one of the moments that you really see how great the casting was on this show. Because Sam was introduced at the end of season one, right?
Yeah.
So, So to think that
third episode and then we're going
midway, I would say.
Yeah. So to think that, you know, they cast John Bradley 10 years ago. And the younger actors in the show were a little rough around the edges, but the fact that he grew in to give a performance like this, like, they were so good. That is one of the lasting legacies of this show will be how well they cast some of these young actors for these final moments, essentially. So just great, great stuff. John Bradley killed it.
Okay, but I have a better question for you guys. Like, what if instead of Pratt falling down into the Stark family crypt to tell John who his real parents were, what if Sam had, like, someone he could talk to? I mean, obviously not Ser Jorah, because Jorah was giving him no comfort there, and I'm really disappointed in Ser Jorah for that. But, like, what if Samwell, who's, like, crying his heart out about his dead dad and unresolved issues with his family, like, what if he had someone he could talk to?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that he needs some sort of service?
Like a talk space.
Like, I'm just saying it's probably hard to find, a good therapist. I mean, maesters are nice and all, but they're not exactly therapists. It's probably hard to find.
And there's not very many maesters even left.
Right, up in Winterfell. And so, like, I bet that if Sam were able to log on to some sort of device and connect with a therapist that way, he could have worked through his issues, pretty quickly.
And as we've talked about on previous Talkspace ads, there's no analog for sending a raven with the amount of media you could send to your therapist using Talkspace. So they match you with one of 4,000 plus therapists, and then the very same day, you could send your therapist unlimited text, audio, picture, or video messages from anywhere at any time. You no longer have to wait for your next appointment to talk about what's on your mind. You don't have to wait for Bran to tell you when it's the right time to get your feelings out. You can do whatever you want from anywhere at any time of day with Talkspace.
No matter what you're going through, even if it's that your dad and your brother were barbecued by a queen with some dragons, you're not alone. There's, like, Talkspace has over 1 million users who feel happier with this service.
I feel like this is a good service for literally anyone in Westeros, because it's like, what are you going to do if you're sitting in your hovel and you hear that the dead are marching toward you? You really just need someone to talk to at that moment. And I think Talkspace, with its convenience and its easy-to-use interface, it's probably the right solution.
It's also affordable. 1 month therapy on the Talkspace platform costs about the same a month as a single face-to-face session. And best of all, you'll never have to wait a week to share what's on your mind. Talkspace has more than 4,000 licensed therapists who are experienced in addressing the challenges we all face. To match with your perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code SOS to get $45 off your first month and show your support for this show. That's SOS and Talkspace.com. All right, let's go for some quick reunion reactions. John and Arya, really cute. Neil.
Adorable. I love that they're hanging out talking swords. Seems like a real John and Arya thing to do. Just a really nice moment.
Joanna.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've talked about this one a bunch already, but like, I think the stakes were just like so, the pressure was so high on this. Cause like, even in universe, right, they had Sansa saying like, John's gonna lose his mind when he sees you. And I'm like, oof, turn it down. You know, like, that's just like setting the expectations up.
It's
so
easy
high
to clear a very low bar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. I thought Kit's performance was better in the Bran meeting. Because there's this like genuine, like he speeds up his horse, he jumps off. There's this genuine, like, holy shit, I didn't think that you were going to make it, dog. And this like really lovely brotherly moment, which I think gets lost because like that was such an emotional thing for John when he left. Like he left before Bran woke up and he had that whole thing with Catelyn. So I don't know. If I have to take one of the John and him, one of his siblings reunion, actually the Bran one's better.
I think the Sansa one is the best actually out of all of them, because like he and Sansa had just been through so much and they see each other and they run into each other's arms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually, I think, the best one, and it should be the Arya one, but it's not, I don't think. I did like the fact that they talk about him dying, because that never happens on the show, as I've mentioned elsewhere, but, Yeah, I don't know. Not my fave, and I'm just hoping that there's more cool Arya and Jon stuff to come, and I think
that's what I'm hoping too. Is like I'm less interested in what their first moments back together are like than I am with like, let's see what happens in between now and the end with those two.
I'm going to say next should be, we're going to stick with Arya. Arya Hound, weird is my reaction. I think that, I don't know. The Hound, when he said at the end of last season that he wouldn't be the one to get in her way, even this seemed like too much in her way. But that just might be me in the middle of a perfectly pleasant episode trying to bring old Game of Thrones grit back. Joanna. Hound Arya.
I don't like it, and I want more other things later. How does them fight together? That would be really fun, right?
Right. The Hound and Arya is another one of those where it's like, well, it's kind of, to me, like, it's a very cold moment. It's, you know, he's very mean, as he always is. It felt pretty honest. I mean, she did leave him to die, which was pretty shitty. But it was an important moment for both of them. I think it's weird. There's two expectations I think that we all have for this season 8 that I don't know are right yet. They probably are, but maybe not. One is that a bunch of these people are going to like get along. Even though they've had like terrible thing, they've done terrible things to each other. And I think that was Sansa's point to Tyrion. It's like, what the hell are you thinking has changed here? So I don't necessarily expect Arya and the Hound to be super friendly, but maybe they'll find something to bond with now that they've put their previous situation behind them. The other thing that I think we all assume is that like everyone's going to die. And I don't necessarily think that's feels right to me for Game of Thrones, but that's something we can talk about later. But yeah, so like, I wasn't necessarily surprised that Arya and the Hound had sort of a cold moment together because they're both sort of being rawly honest about the fact that, you know, they probably would have preferred each other die at some point. So, you know, just paves the way for Arya and Gendry, which I thought was a lovely moment for the kids.
And then,
well, I just like that it's great see Arya smile and have fun, and not in the you should smile more way. It's just like she's been through so much shit that it's good to see her connect with characters that give her positive emotions.
Or that she's still even capable of that, because most of the Arya that we saw last season was like the I could cut off your face, sister. That's all I would need to be Lady of Winterfell. And so, you know, we gotta loop back on that.
This podcast, I didn't know we booked Maisie. Fuck yeah!
No, that was just
that's our
Anthony
secret.
Hopkins
we got all the top line talent for Storm of Spoilers. They said no to all of the other podcasts.
That's my secret cap. We've got Anthony Hopkins as our star.
Last one before we leave Winterfell and move on to the other locations: Tyrion and Sansa. That's the one I want more of, because I love two smart people sparring with things. That used to be the barest little finger juice I got. Now I'm getting it with like Sansa and Tyrion, and Sansa totally calling Tyrion out as being dumb. I know Tyrion, as the Hand of the Queen, shouldn't have a retort, but I would like him to want to feel liked by Sansa and come back for another try at that would probably be unsuccessful. Just like two characters I like watching talk to each other, Sansa and Tyrion. Welcome back, Neil.
Yes. Well, I would actually like to set aside Tyrion for a second, because that's a whole nother story. What I want for Sansa is for her to only have conversations with people on the ramparts of Winterfell, because every time she's up there, she's putting somebody in their place. And I think that's excellent. I love this because you can tell that they're aware of the way people are going to react a little bit to the Dany Sansa thing, how there's going to be tension there, and there's nuance. We understand it. But this is really a moment where Sansa gets to shine as like, I really have learned a lot here, and no one tells Tyrion that he's full of shit, And I like that she gets to be the one to tell him that he's full of shit sometimes. And that he really, you know, maybe isn't the smartest person in the room. Like Joanna said earlier, I don't think that makes Sansa the smartest person in the room, but it's something she's earned as a character. She's earned the right to look at Tyrion and be like, yeah, bud, you're not cutting it right now. Like, you need better ideas and stop believing your stupid sister because she's going to try and kill us all. So,
but also,
great Sansa moment.
Yeah, great Sansa. Agree with you. Love it. It reminded me of, like, all of her shit with Littlefinger on those ramparts. Exactly what you're talking about. Also, my boy Jon Royce, of course. But, like, the
always
the
catching that drama.
the it had its moments. I mean, like, you know, this is Game of Thrones getting, like, kind of cheesy. Like, you know, the script is not as good as it used to be. Like, this is just true. The dialogue is not as sharp as it used to be. It used to be much, you know, like, this is no Queen of Thorns, you know, cutting remark or whatever, but it's still a great moment when she smirks and just says it had its moments about Joffrey's wedding. That's great. It's a great, she earned it. take that win.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I think it's good. And it's going to be good seeing characters in this season doing things that we've watched them learn how to do. And we've watched them sort of earn the right to be like, I'm the person who knows about this. And that is going to come out, and those are going to be the satisfying moments of this season, regardless of sort of what we feel about the rest of the story construction or whatever else.
Mm-hmm. All right. For the sake of not having limitless time, I guess we should get down to King's Landing and catch up on events there.
Oh, that old place.
Yeah. Cersei's bought herself an army that unfortunately doesn't have any elephants, because elephants and direwolves apparently are too expensive when you have a dragon ride to some fake waterfalls.
Too expensive for the most expensive show in the history of shows.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's not what we're going to give you. We're going to give you a Drogon kiss face. And that's what you got instead. So they show up. Euron finally gets his wish. She gets to fuck the queen. We see Cersei drink some wine, which, if we've learned, it's Wednesday of this week. I'm sorry if you haven't listened to all the podcasts and read all the articles we've been referencing. Apparently, wine drinking doesn't have any correlation to pregnancy as far as the midwives of Westeros know of or care about. So Cersei's been drinking wine through all of her pregnancies, we can assume. That certainly seems on brand. But that being said, we get a little teary-eyed look after Euron says he's going to put a prince in her belly. What's going on, Neil Miller?
Well, I guess this is one of the things that is sort of puzzling me at this point, is what Cersei's play is. And that, you know, I guess good on the show for hiding it. I mean, it could be a number
of things. It's the one thing the show is ahead of us, besides like where the White Walkers are going to be next, which is actually also in the opening credits. So the most of the show is, you know, reunions we knew we were going to see, information we already know be revealed to people, except now we have like this Cersei look thrown in, and I thought I knew it was going on, and now I don't know anymore.
Yeah, it's really King's Landing's kind of a tough read, because is Cersei trying to set this up to let Euron be the king and make him think it's his baby? That doesn't read with the way she and Jaime talked about it previously, where she's like, I'll say that you're the father. I don't give a shit. So I don't know. I mean, obviously she's just trying to keep Euron close and in the fold and fighting for her and loyal to her. Because I think that she understands her grasp on him and how important that is, especially for getting her now 20,000 soldiers and zero elephants to where she needs them to kill who she needs them to kill. So I think it's just, it could be as simple as this, a straightforward political play to keep Euron in. There could be more baby drama. I don't know what Cersei's whole game is. I think the more interesting thing is the Bronn thing, which is, am I wrong? I guess we'll get to this more in the storm, but I don't understand why Bronn is why anyone thinks Bronn's going to go through with this whole plan. I guess people have actually asked us questions on Twitter whether or not we think that is part of Cersei's plan, or if Qyburn's sort of freelancing, or I don't know what Cersei's doing. Is what I'm saying.
I will say this, because I don't think it's a spoiler, because I don't know this from spoiler information, so I think it's safe for the calm. Which is this, our friend Kim Renfro interviewed Jerome Flynn on the red carpet at the premiere, and he's like, I'm actually really worried about the season. I don't think people are going to like Bronn very much. So I think Bronn is 100% going to go through with this.
But that's also exactly what you would say if you were trying to play part of the fake out.
I don't think Jerome Flynn is like the fake out police. I don't know. But anyway, I think that he is going to,
at least try it.
Yeah, I think he's going to try it. I mean, I could be wrong, but like, and I've said this elsewhere. I really like the symmetry of him selling out to all three Lannister siblings, right?
Right.
He worked for Tyrion, he worked for Jaime, and now he's working for Cersei. And he said that all along, like he's just in it for money.
So. Well, but he's already got the gold because Cersei pays beforehand. I just think he's going to like get north and die of the pox, you know, like. Like he takes the money and we don't like him, but I think
it's a really interesting question about Bronn's loyalty and who he really is friends with. You know, because obviously Tyrion has constantly been offering to pay double, which Tyrion is once again in a position to do if necessary. Jaime, the last sort of big moment he had with Jaime was him telling Jaime that he's the one who gets to kill him, which I think feels a little more real now. So I actually kind of like your theory of him sort of aligning with all three, but I don't know, man. That's super dark. I can see him trying it, but I don't know if he gets away with it
or goes through with it. I think he's going to try and fail. I don't know.
I would be a little disappointed in Bronn though. Like as a character.
That's what Jerome Flynn's saying.
You know? He's probably right. It's like, well, Bronn, like he has no loyalty. That's the whole thing about him, but he's also not stupid. Like you assume he's going to pick the winning side at the end. But I guess we still don't know who that is.
I don't know the answer to this.
Yeah. This is one of the, and that's why I think King's Landing's sort of still very fascinating because there are a lot of Cersei related questions we don't have the answers to yet.
Yeah. All right. So while we're also down there, Theon rescues Yara and Theon decides to go to Winterfell where everyone is probably going to die. So that's super fun. Yara decides to go back to the Iron Islands to retake them, from whatever is not on Euron's Iron Fleet. And, because Daenerys is gonna need a place to retreat to after Winterfell falls. So thanks for that vote of confidence, Yara. But that's also saying, go ahead, brother. What is dead, you never die. So good scene that Joanna covered in her favorite reunion.
Very quick sequence, though. Which was what surprised me.
Well, I managed to kill one of the main Always Sunny in Philadelphia cast members, so that's nice of any sequence.
And my favorite Freaks and Geeks actor. I love Martin Starr, aka Bill Haverchuk. Anyway, the Theon Yara thing. I was fully on board with Yara being right. That, like, you can go to an island and the dead can't get there. But everyone has been yelling at me that, like, if the Night King has a dragon, he and just, like, a few of his bros just need to hop on the back of the dragon and then hop over to wherever and raise the dead from there. So, like...
Then the walking Kraken picks up a random ironborn and Star Wars missiles them out of the air.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You also got the Kraken that could throw rocks and anything, really. It's used to throwing people cross country.
Yeah, we're back to me being right. I like that position better. Thank you.
You got the defensive... Everyone's like, what if there's an ice dragon under Winterfell? Everyone's forgetting the throwable Krakens.
Well, I
super important.
I also think that people are assuming that all the dragons make it that far, which is an interesting thing to think.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it. And then small Ned John Umber screams while attached to a wall. Ned John Umber.
That took a second, but it's good.
There's been some talk that the spiral was a Targaryen sigil, but that seems not to be true.
I think that's bullshit.
Not all spirals are the same, I guess. My greater question with this is, what is the message that the Night King is trying to send? Is it that if you try to fight me with fire, you'll burn more meat? Is it more abstract?
It's the secret to the whole thing, which is that if you kill the thing at the center, the fire spreads to all of them. So target still, mm-hmm. Night King.
I think it's, I don't have to explain my art to you, Warren.
Well, and it's great. You know, they're constantly calling back to that tree where the Night King was created there. So let's not forget that, I guess. That could be important because that is the other place. I mean, other than where the dead army has left body parts in that way, we've seen it two other places. At that tree when the Children of the Forest created the Night King, and then in the cave where the Children of the Forest documented how they created the Night King, but no one can read it because it's 1,000 years old. So, you know, just some things to remember.
Yep. And then House Umber, another last hearth as joins our empty houses, our empty castles of Westeros. Rest in peace. And I think with that, we are going to transition to the storm.
All right, now is the part of the show where we take a moment to thank some of our ever-growing small council members on Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. If you hit that that top level, we will read your name once a quarter. This is happening right now. Here's who I would like to thank. These are all newbies. I will start with Jimmy Luck Taylor, Brian Kerr, ran out of cake. I'm so sorry about that. Shante Gonzalez, no relation? I don't know. Cloderic Mars.
Cloderic.
Got it. Yep, I nailed it. John Shen, Anthony Markham, Saran Poorts. Yep, close enough. Jennifer Caldwell, and Anne Vardaman. Thank you very much.
And I'd like to thank Samantha Olthoff, Riley Trahan. Hey, buddy. Jennifer Trice, Kristen Butterfield, Rosa, Samantha Cooper-Smith, Jana Gardner. I'm going to say Jana Gardner. I'm sticking with my things. Jenner Remers, Jamie Smith, and David G. Also my name.
All right. I want to thank Mariah Figueroa, Melissa Beerley, Natalie Sweet, it's gotta be Natalie, Jan or Jan Carlo, Lord of the Soups and Warden of the Grill, Tiffany Flowers, Stephen Miller, William Eggert, Susan Shirley, Chris Rummel, and my bro, Weed Detective. Thank you guys so much.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last. You're in my way.
And that sound was the sound of a body hitting the water, which means we are in the storm. Guys, if you are listening to this, I expect that you've read all Joanna's posts. You've listened to all our previous podcasts. You're ready for us to, you know, talk about some things that you've already talked about knowing. We're going to try to, you know, loop back and make sure everybody's as informed as possible. This is the part of the show where we use all of our resources to talk about Game of Thrones. Let's go back to some of our notes from previous in the episode. Joanna, you have a stormy thought about the opening credits.
Well, okay, so they're like, ooh, let's go into the castles. Let's go under the castles. And I'm like, this feels like a wildfire troll to me. It's like, let's go under the castle, down where the dragons are, and see what's down there. And it's fucking wildfire down there. And what we think we know from the spoilers is that Tyrion's gonna set off some more wildfire under the city and boom, explode it. So, that's what I think is happening. Also, someone in our Slack pointed out to me that, one production spoiler I know is that they're building like a massive, even bigger scorpion dragonfeller, as we like to call it on this podcast.
That dragonfeller.
Not the dragonfeller, that's gonna go on the walls of King's Landing. Apparently you can see that down with the dragon skulls underneath the throne room.
I don't thing. I see. I don't know if that's the bigger Scorpion or if that's just a visual callback to the first Scorpion that Qyburn had shoot against
that. I'm sure it is that it like locates you where, you know, hey, remember last time we were down here? There was a Scorpion and we shot it.
Oh, but you think like that actually is where the bigger Scorpion's going
to
be?
No, just that it's like a nod. It's like it serves two functions, right?
It's like, hey, don't forget about that Scorpion.
Yeah, but also, hey, Scorpions are a thing. You know, remember that.
Yeah, I mean, they really, these opening credits establish that they want us to think about the size of the remaining two castles where we will have the battles. They want us to think about the size of King's Landing, the size of Winterfell, what's in the walls, what's underneath them, where are people going to hide, where, you know, where the battle's going to take place. And I really love that about the opening credits because, I mean, it's this sense of the world shrinking that will permeate at least the first half of the season in my mind. Like that's, they've set up the theme and they've done it very cleverly to where we're not really thinking about what happens when everything goes boom. I love the opening credits.
So cool. If like, let's say the wildfire goes off in the penultimate episode and then the last episode is like the aftermath, it would be so cool if the opening credits for the final, episode were like, wildfire going off in
like a smoldering King's Landing, kind of like they did a smoldering Winterfell after the Boltons.
Well, see, that's the thing. What if we're still flying through Winterfell in episodes 4, 5, and 6?
Well, it'll be like, what is that ghost look town? Like? If it's
can it just be ghosts left there?
It goes underneath Winterfell. It's just ghosts sitting there. Like, where'd everybody go?
Scratching at a door.
But yeah, I mean, we know that they're doing Helm's Deep for the Battle of Winterfell, and we've seen that shot of like Varys and Gilly sort of hiding in the Winterfell crypts. There's that whole theory that like the dead Starks are going to be raised by the Night King, that I don't know that I agree with, but, you know, is a possibility.
Or that Bran resurrects all of his former ancestors to fight.
All the brands.
He raises all
the
brands.
Or their fire whites.
Or their fire whites, which is a great theory that I love. Anyway, so yeah, a lot of possibilities underground. That's all I want to say about the opening credits. I would love it if it's a wildfire troll.
Well, while we're sticking things about fire and underground Winterfell, I was going to say my Jon reveal idea. The one thing that could maybe this show is telegraphed as I'm a Targaryen is if he survives fire. Like, I know Targaryens are fireproof, but on this show, they can be when they want to be. And Daenerys has twice used that as her power play. That might be the thing that.
What if Jon survives icy fire?
Maybe. But either way, I think that there's going to be a lot of fire around Winterfell, and Jon doesn't seem like somebody who runs. So maybe his survival, if they have to burn Winterfell, can push people along that, or no, egg on them on that Targaryen road.
They can egg, I dreamed I was old them along.
Yes.
Okay.
That was my one thought. I don't like it, but in terms of if you're going to make a big moment out of Jon proving that he's a Targaryen, that's the only other thing I can think about the show's established.
I mean, if they were to do that, it would set off a million angry book readers with the gif of Jon burning his hand in season, one or two on the lantern. Yes. I always remember that anytime somebody's like, well, you know, what if Jon, anytime this comes up of like, how does Jon prove he's a Targaryen? If it's fire related, everyone's going to be mad about that one scene. It won't be reasonable to react that way, but,
you know. I mean, the show, I don't know, this is forever going to be like holes in the logic here, because like, if fire can't hurt a Targaryen, then wouldn't good old Viserys still be alive, or did he like suffocate from the metal?
I think he suffocated. That was the whole idea.
I don't know, but like, no, because he had his mouth open to like scream, right? And then, oh, remember that clonk? What a great clonk that was.
He died of a brain hemorrhage.
But I do really like that idea. That's how he proves it, for realsies. Dave, fire cannot kill a dragon.
Because getting up on top of a dragon, riding it around a bunch in front of everyone.
Nope, that's not enough.
Is not enough.
We still could have solved that problem if they did what I proposed, which was Jon on Ghost on Rhaegal. Then we could be like, of course. It's a terrified direwolf, and then a Stark riding a direwolf, which is very normal. But no. All right, Neil Theory,
yep.
It says in the notes, the Stark children and the problems they can solve.
Well, let me explain this. I have begun the perilous journey of trying to figure out how all the Stark children make it. This might be a fool's errand. I don't know. It's fun, though. It's what I do with my time. So I've started to think about, like, what is the problem that each of them solves? So let's imagine that in, like, the great lore of this, it's like we have our heroes, Jon and Daenerys. They need to figure their shit out. But then these Stark children are all going to serve some sort of greater purpose, like their thing. And they each sort of solve a problem that remains. So if you think about, you know, we need someone to explain to us all the magical shit. Bran, he's like the Google. We need someone to actually go and be the killer who can deliver death to death, which there's a small death dealer in their hands now in Arya, who's about to get a very cool weapon. So she's there basically to be the killer who can bring death to death. Sansa is, in my mind, the key to defeating Cersei. And if it becomes a situation where Cersei needs to be defeated, Sansa could be the key. So this is just sort of a thought experiment I've been going through. I haven't really matched it up against any real spoilers or anything yet, so I'm sure most of it's wrong. But I like this idea of, like, if more people are going to live than what you would assume, like, if the Stark children really are the sort of core of the story, what is the purpose for them and their journeys? And this is the best that I've come up with so far. I feel like it'll evolve as we get more information.
I can't disagree with any of that as much as I feel like Sansa won't make it.
Everybody seems to feel like that. I don't know. What? I'm not.
Well, you're.
I'm coming around on Sansa making it, only because, like, the showrunners like her so much.
It feels like they're setting this up to be, like, Sansa is constantly the one who is right about Cersei. At this point in the show, she is telling Tyrion that she's right about Cersei and Jon.
I've heard a lot of stories about Arya going on, like, a secret faceless man assassin thing to kill Cersei. Like, while there's going to be this battle in King's Landing, right? There's the Battle of Winterfell, Battle of King's Landing. So during the melee of the Battles of King's Landing, Arya sneaks up and just kills Cersei. If it's like an Arya
using Jamie's face.
No, fuck that. If it's an Arya and Sansa co-pro, I'm super into it. Like,
right.
Really into, like,
well, yeah.
Assassins team up to kill Cersei. But I think what's happening is Dany and Sansa are going to Dragonstone and are just going to chill out, I mean, which is so stupid, and chill out there. I don't know. Hopefully not for the whole battle, but, like, they're definitely going there from when they lose at Winterfell, they're retreating to Dragonstone. Daenerys is at Dragonstone. I think Daenerys is pregnant. Like, I don't know if there's any way she cannot be, but, like, maybe she's not. If they stick the pregnant lady and Sansa at Dragonstone for, like, the back half of the season, it will super suck. So hopefully that's not what they're going to do. But yeah. I like the idea
if they're going to make it, I want them to each have a role in the end game.
Someone came up with this great idea that, like, Tyrion, when he blows up the city, that he's accidentally going to kill Jaime. He's going to kill Cersei and Jaime. So, like, if he kills Cersei in the wildfire explosion, that's a Valonqar, you know, thing to do, right? If he kills Jaime too, I mean, that's just going to absolutely immolate Tyrion to have killed Jaime, right?
Well, so how do we think the Bronn thing fits in then? So Bronn goes up, he tries it, and he fails. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Dies of pox.
I don't think Bronn succeeds. Something I heard is that Bronn is perhaps, like, when they, so, like, Tyrion does this thing, and then he's, like, some kind of fugitive, and that Bronn captures him and takes him to Daenerys.
That makes sense, I guess.
That's something I've heard. So I don't know how it all fits in, but I've heard that Bronn, like, betrays Tyrion that way. If you want to call that a betrayal, but that he, like, sort of brings Tyrion in.
The scene in this episode is just so we could have him fight with the Night King. Sorry. So we could have him at the Battle of Winterfell.
Bronn?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, it's very silly that, like, really what they should have done with Bronn is just had him leave King's Landing with Jaime last season.
Right.
You know? But they didn't. I mean, I kind of liked that it was Jaime all alone. But yeah, I mean, I think Bronn's gonna try to kill Jaime and Tyrion, but I could be wrong, but that makes sense to me with his character. I don't know that he'll just take whoever wants to give him more money. He'll take it.
Or, the fact that they're starting out so late, I mean, does Bronn even make it by the time Winterfell falls? You know, like, that's another question is like, when are they even going to see Bronn, like, on their way back?
Yeah, that would be interesting to hold him off until...
Like, I believe Theon's going to get there, and he'll be part of the battle, but I'm not 100% sure Bronn can make it even... I mean, this is a stupid thing to say, anybody watching Game of Thrones, that you don't think something can happen in time.
great idea. get that big new Dragonfeller out, and they just load it up with Bronn in the chamber.
And they just shoot him to, like, the twins.
You toss Theon collide midair over the trident.
Aim him north. And just, fire away. All right, so that's Neil's theory with the Stark children. Let's talk about that look that Bran gave Tyrion in the courtyard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did Bran see the Sept blowing up when he saw Wildfire earlier, or did he see at the end of this season?
He saw the Sept blowing up because it's the exact same shot that they used when the Sept blew up. Those barrels on either side of that hallway sort of coming at you towards the camera. That's what he saw.
What if the Wildfire thing is Bran's idea?
I don't think it will be.
What if he inceptions it into Tyrion?
No, stop with your fucking no. That's some kind bad theorizing.
He looks at Tyrion really hard, and he thinks, burn them all so hard. No, thinks it through time.
Stop. All right, anyway.
Or it's just like, as they're leaving, Bran's like, by the way, don't forget about all that wildfire. You could use that later.
By the way, what seems evident by the next time on preview is that Jaime is going to show up, tell him that Cersei is about to betray. Because, like, the next time on, unless it included, like, this season on, has Dany and Sansa thinking, like, Dany's like, he was a fool to trust her, and Sansa says, so were you. So, like, it seems like not only do they know the truth about what Cersei is planning now, because probably thanks to Jaime, but they're like, wow, Tyrion fucking sucks. already, episode 2, Tyrion sucks. Tyrion sucks and his ideas are bad. So Tyrion is already in the disgraced position by episode 2. I thought it was going to take until after the Battle of Winterfell, but I feel like, he's already disgraced next week.
If what we know about Tyrion at the end is true, then his position in Winterfell is to make that mistake of not burning Winterfell. So he actually kind of has to be somewhat serviceable at Winterfell, the Battle of Winterfell, I think. Because, I don't know, maybe he could help him find a way out, maybe something like that. But we get that shot at him on the ramparts as, like, sun's going down. So we know he's not, like, they don't, like, toss him in the jail or anything like that.
Sun's getting real low. Big guy.
Yeah, but I think he's gonna make the argument, like, I'm fucking Tyrion Lannister of the Blackwater, and, it might not have worked, but here we go.
Tyrion's like, let's do it again, but this time let's use a chain.
Yes.
It'll be even better. Sorry, that's an old school Storm Spoiler shout out for, I guess we were mad that Tyrion didn't use the chain in the Blackwater. Anyway.
Not enough chain in our Blackwater episode.
And then too much chain.
Complaints
later.
We used to have.
Yeah.
Too much chain north of the wall.
Anyway, like,
too much
inexplicable
chain.
I just think that, like Bran obviously sees something, but he doesn't understand what with Tyrion. Also, here's another thing that I can talk about in the storm. I'm pretty sure I'm like 85% sure Theon's dying in the Battle of Winterfell. So he's, like, reuniting with Yara, and then he says, like, basically, I gotta go home.
He's gotta go save Bran.
Winterfell is my home. And then, like, there's that line from the trailer where Bran says, like, everything you did brought you here, home. And I'm, like, I'm 1,000% sure he's talking to Theon when he says that. And so Theon comes home to Winterfell for redemption and then dies in the Battle of Winterfell, which just is going to... very much upset me. But so that's why I'm pretty sure that Theon and Yara scene is the only Theon and Yara scene we're going to get in this season. Like, that was their goodbye. So,
boo, Yara's not going to come to Helm's Deep it. With the Ironborn?
No, I mean, what's kind of cool is I think the Deus Ex Machina of the Battle of Winterfell, I think, is the Golden Company showing up, but it's not the elves have come to Helm's Deep to help you. It's you're about to get fucked from the back end too. Like, here comes Cersei's troops. I think that's true. I think the Golden Company, from the leaks I've seen, I think the Golden Company's at the Battle of Winterfell. I thought they were just gonna like hang back at King's Landing, but I think they're gonna show up to like attack from the backside, which is so stupid. Like, why would you even put yourself anywhere near the fucking Night King? Like, you know, if you didn't have to. So I'm sure there will be some reason, but I think that's like, I would guess, if I had to guess, and I'll probably be very wrong, but like, what if we don't even check in with King's Landing at all next week? It's just all Winterfell calm before the storm. And then we get the Battle of Winterfell and we've like almost forgotten about the Golden Company. And then they like show up and it's like, bah, 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 bah. That's my like Lord of the Rings cue of the elves are here. That wasn't very good.
It was the beginning of the final countdown.
Yeah, it was. It did sound like the final countdown. But it's close. What does that elf theme sound like? You know what I mean? When they're like marching up? Anyway. So they come and then, but they're not there to help. They're there to fuck you. You know, that's a thought.
Or they're there for Dario to be like, ah, twist.
Oh,
I don't know.
I like Fire Whites better. Let's roll back to last week when we thought Fire Whites would save everybody.
But that's a good, like, maybe there's two. They love their like, ah, lo, what is that on the horizon? Because Melisandre and the Red Priests fucking showing up to do some shit. That I think also is going to happen. So Melisandre and the Red Priests roller up.
Just a bunch of holy rollers.
But then like the Golden Company comes up too. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll see.
Well,
I can't wait to see. Guys, we're only a couple weeks away.
There's so many battles coming up in the upcoming weeks. It's nonstop war.
This does lead me back to one sort of final question about the episode 2 teaser, which I think Joanna sort of brought up, which is, do you think that this is only stuff from the next episode, or do we think there's more than that? Because I think them intentionally putting more than that feels right to me.
Ooh, see, I think it's just the next episode. I think every bit of footage that we get will only bring us the smallest increment forward
because, like,
as possible.
Is there anything that we've seen on the show that we, in the like teasers, that wasn't in episode one? Like, there's battle stuff. Okay, never mind. There's battle stuff.
Well, that's the thing that threw me off is there, unless episode two sort of ends with the battle sort of beginning, or like the Night King showing up for the battle, I don't understand why that footage is there.
No, I think it is. I think when they say episode 3 is wall-to-wall battle, they mean
it's like in the battle. The battle will have started.
It starts next week, and then it won't end until week 4 is what my guess in terms of, you know, dramatic tension. It would be weird to, like, I don't know, maybe.
You're right. I mean, they do say next on. They don't say, like, I'm looking at it right now, and you do have like the, well, they're test, like, basically they're getting ready. So like you see the I think it's a trebuchet. You see the trebuchet going, but it's in the daytime, and so I think that's just them like prepping their siege weapons, and then you see
like, yeah, because they say like how much time do we have until nightfall or something. So they know basically Tormund and company somehow do a run around, an end around the Night King's army, get there, and they're all like arguing over Jaime/politics. And Beric Dondarrion's like, fuck off. This is like happening tonight. And then, Sansa and Jaime and Tyrion are like, we'll finish this later. And
yeah,
then
you, man the fuck up. You would almost have to assume that in that scenario that Tyrion shot of like him on the ramparts at night is like the last shot of the episode.
Yeah. And then you're going to get, right. Well, I actually think the last shot of the episode is that hoof.
Okay. Yeah.
So it like zooms out and then you just get the hoof and then it's like, boom, here we go. So
that leaves us with talking about Jaime. That leaves us with John deciding whether Night's going to tell anybody anything. That leaves us with Arya getting her weapon from Gendry. That leaves us with everybody else talking who needs to talk before they die. So Theon shows up. Arya probably talks to, like, the Hound again. Varys makes some sort of joke about not having balls. Jorah. Yeah, all these people.
Who are the sword.
All the people, Jorah's going to get Heartsbane. Like, all the people that we think are probably going to die, get a nice moment, which is why I'm worried that, you know, if we get, you know, I'm still like, I'm currently 50-50 on whether or not Bran and Jaime survive the Battle of Winterfell. I really hope they do. I've heard some recent rumblings that maybe they do. You know, any people who get like some tender, this is my conspiracy theory about those, the cast remembers videos that they did. Did I talk about this on the podcast or just in the Slack?
I think just not on the podcast, not on this podcast yet.
Okay. Well, I certainly didn't talk about it on another podcast because this is spoiler shit. My conspiracy theory is that Rory McCann and Ian Glenn get their own, the cast remembers videos because they're fucking dying at the Battle of Winterfell. That's what I think. So Emilia in her, the cast remembers videos, talks about Ian, and Maisie in her, the cast remembers videos, talks about Rory. So like the Hound and Jorah, like really building up their meaning to the story, to the audience, to prime them for their loss meaning more later. That's my conspiracy theory about that.
Or it's an elaborate ruse meant to screw with you specifically.
I think the ruse would be the fact that Liam Cunningham gets his own, and I don't think Davos dies. So I think they picked like three supporting characters, and two of which are dying, and one of which is not. That's what I think. But you know,
That's a good theory. I like it. So love a good theory.
All right. Any closing comments?
I will accept all of your flowers and condolences when Ser Jorah dies in Battle of Winterfell.
I will accept nothing if Tormund dies, because Tormund has almost died as many times as anyone on this show, and when he goes, it'll just be awesome. So that's it.
I look forward to talking tomorrow about who's right in medieval politics, because that might be the last time I get to for a little bit until the finale, I guess. But yeah, all right, guys. Neil, that seems weird to ask, but what are we up to next week?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, we weren't really sure. But then we sat down, talked about it, and we thought, you know, we should just come back and review another episode of Game of Thrones if they have one. So assuming there is an episode 2 of Game of Thrones and the world doesn't end between now and then, we will be back talking about episode 2, named TBD, best known to its friends on HBO Go as Game of Thrones 69.
Game of Thrones 69.
So, and don't forget this nice game of nice. That's the only way I'm going to be referring to it. I don't care what the actual title is. It'll probably be something fun like Kingslayer or something. But
oh, it'd be so good. I would cry.
The Kingslayer.
Kingslayer would be really good because King's Road is episode 2 of season 1. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Winter's coming, Winterfell, King's Road, Kingslayer. Ooh. Yep. Oh, I love it.
Also, do not want anyone to forget that this is not the last time you can hear us discuss in depth things about Game of Thrones episode 1 Winterfell. If you are a member of the Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, we will have one more mailbag episode before the week is over. So sign up, become part of the small council, send us, you'll find out how to give us your questions. It'll be great. We'll answer those. And then yeah, for the folks that just listened to the main show, next week, episode 2.
Oh, and then also next week, I forgot to add this in, guys, you'll be getting 2 episodes of the show. One about Game of Thrones.
Oh, shit.
One about Avengers Endgame, which comes to punch us in the gut next week. So, welcome to Storm of Spoilers. We talk about Game of Thrones, but also the biggest Marvel movies coming out. So you're going to have multiple hours of content.
Yeah, 2 big free episodes next week. So everybody's getting their money's worth.
In case you're all gluttons for punishment, where can we find more of your work on the internet before we talk to you next? Joanna Robinson.
I got some fun Avengers stuff coming up on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jarothis. You can listen to my other Game of Thrones podcasts. I've got one called A Cast of Kings, and then one that I would like really hoping that more people listen to. I'm sorry to like beg for it, but we put so much work into it, including Dave, which is still watching colon Game of Thrones. We've got a lot of good interviews, and it goes up like as early as we possibly physically can on Monday. So that is, you know, your first chance to hear me.
It's why I have coffee in the morning, Monday, every Monday morning. Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, as always, you get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where we've got plenty of Game of Thrones and Marvel Avengers Endgame from some very talented young writers. I may also write a long form article about Bran Stark. We'll see. You can follow me at Rejects, and don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. And if you would like to send in questions, even if you're not part of the small council, you can still send us questions. stormofspoilers@gmail.com. And if we get some really good ones, we'll read them on the main show.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E and my write-ups for Game of Thrones every Monday, or hopefully Sunday night, but at least Monday morning at Thrillist.com. Guys, we have this tradition around here where we hope that you don't fall down, both for your safety and because it's fun to just not intentionally lose your balance and find yourself on the ground.
Don't be a Samwell Tarly.
That's right. Don't be a Samwell Tarly down in the crypts. Don't fall down. We'll see you next week.